So with that, we're going to actually go and see how we can enhance.
And go into the best bucket. And we'll start looking at WM Touch messaging, how to handle that. And we'll also look at the manipulation inertia API, which essentially gives you more power than what we've seen.
Okay.
We'll start by first looking at how to handle WM Touch messages with a simple sort of simple paint application where you can put your fingers on and then it starts drawing lines, that sort of thing.
Yeah. The fingerprint. So what would be the right sequence or pipeline of handling WM Touch messages?
Generally, you register your window for WM Touch. Unlike gestures, which you just get natively, you have to opt in to WM Touch. Once you've done that, you add a handler for the WM Touch message, and you do whatever you want with it. And in many ways, it's similar to WM Gesture. You unpack the raw message, and you get a series of structs. You actually get an array of touch input structs that correspond to each finger. And it tells you things like the height and width of the contact. It gives you a unique ID for the finger, and so forth. And then you handle them however you want. In the Scratchpad sample we're going to be showing here, there's just a simple visualization of the touch data. I believe the first finger down always shows up as black, and then they randomly choose colors for the other fingers. So it shows off a couple interesting things about the touch input struct.
And you mentioned that you need to register to opt into this.
Yes, correct. Raw touch data and pre-processed gestures right now are exclusive. That may change in the future. But if you register for WM Touch data, you will not get WM Gesture notifications in the same window.
Okay.
So we'll actually dive into the code here. So right now I have a pretty basic sample. Right now it's not handling WM Touch. It's just a standard window. And if we go over, we see that there's nothing being painted as expected. So we'll begin to implement that and go through the necessary steps in order to get that effect. So as Reed mentioned, what you want to do is you want to register the touch window and basically tell the system that we want to start receiving WM touch messages. So we do so by calling the register touch window function, pass the hwind of the application that you want to handle touch. And then this is the default argument. Probably want to expand on.
Yeah, there's at least one other flag that you can specify here that turns off coalescing. By default, touch messages are coalesced. If for some reason you didn't want coalescing, maybe you have some sort of recognition that requires all the packets, and missing any of them might cause misrecognition errors, like maybe handwriting reco or something. You can request to get the uncoalesced data. However, the onus is then on you to pump the message queue fast enough and process all those messages and so forth. But by default, you get coalescing.
So by default, we are trying. So in this, coalescing is different from the gesture in any way?
I mean, under the covers, they're implemented differently, but the idea is the same. Whenever your app gets around to pumping a message and you get a WM touch or WM gesture message, you get the most recent state. So you never get old data. Now, if you're pumping your message queue very fast, then you will get more messages. Whereas if you were, you know, under load or doing something else and not pumping quite as often, you would get fewer total messages, but each one would have the current data.
So we always have accurate data to work
with.
So we see here, it's simply calling the register touch window function. And from there, we can begin receiving WM touch messages. So I'm just going to implement a few helpers. And it'll become more apparent. This basically unpacks the data that we're going to get in the touch input struct. So what happens is that you receive a WM touch message, you call get touch input info function, and you basically populate a touch input structure. And from there, you unpack it. Kind of similar to what we saw in gesture when we unpack the gesture info and begin getting the arguments like X and Y coordinates and that sort of thing, and cursor IDs. So one of the things that is worthy to note is that by default, the x and y coordinates that you get from WM Touch are in 100th to a pixel. So one of the things that the developer has to do is, if they want to put it in actual pixels, they would have to divide it by 100, or else the values get skewed.
Yeah. Again, this is if you're doing something perhaps complicated with WM Touch, we give you the data in centipixels because a lot of the digitizers provide a subpixel resolution. They are much higher resolution than the display itself, and that might be useful for particular reco problems or things like that, or maybe for visualizations, you know, very high fidelity touch rendering or something like that. So the data that you get back in the touch input struct is in centipixels. If you're just rendering it directly to the screen, yes, you know, divide it by 100 or whatever.
Okay.
So one of the next helper function that I'm implementing is in order to extract the DWID. And this is essentially the ID of the input that you get. And that's necessary because in comparison to WM Touch and WM Gesture, in WM Touch we can receive multiple contact points and begin to treat each one differently. And we do that by associating the DWID that you get to a particular object. For instance, if you want to move two objects on the screen, and say the contact ID starts at 1 and then the next finger is 2, we know that the contact ID for 1 belongs to this object, the contact ID for 2 belongs to this object.
Sure. So basically, over a long time, you get a vector
yes.
that represents a specific finger, a specific touch point that you are using.
Yep.
Okay.
So,
we extract the point and we got the ID for per touch point.
Correct. So this is just a helper function to extract the point. So
okay.
Once the touch input info gets populated, you can simply just access it through the struct that you have. So we finished implementing a couple more handlers, and this is basically the handlers for one of the things that you get from WM Touch are different event flags. So you can get like down event, move event, and an up event. And from there, it's the developer's responsibility to handle that. And kind of discern between the different events and then do what's necessary. So in this particular example, we have handlers for down, move, and up, and it's what we'll use in order to start painting on the screen.
And that's basically event per touch point, right? So if I like...
Yes, correct.
Put four finger and just raise in the middle of the one, so I get...
Yeah, so if I've got four fingers doing something like that, at any given point in time, you get a WM Touch message that has... when you unpack it, an array of four touch input structs, and each of those has information about a particular contact. It has IDs, their position, whether they just went down, they're moving, they just went up, that sort of thing.
Cool.
Right. So these are the functions that we implemented earlier to unpack the touch points and unpack the contact ID. And from there, we're taking those and we're placing them into another class that we created, which is basically draws the stroke on the screen.
Okay.
That is outside of the API, and again is, you know, sort of the developer's responsibility to do what they will with the touch input info.
Sure. You just provide the raw information
Correct.
For what to paint and where.
Right. So we have the same thing for move and up. And one of the important things to note, which we'll see more apparent when we start moving multiple objects on the screen, is that the whole idea of taking these cursors and associating them to specific objects and creating a mapping between them.
Sure.
So that when we have to call on the particular object that owns this cursor, it's a very efficient lookup.
Right. So this way, we have the IDs, right?
Correct.
Per touch point.
So we'll begin. We'll begin handling the WM Touch message. We'll see that it's a bit more work than handling WM Gesture, but it's still very efficient in terms of how much code you have to write in order to get the info.
So we've seen handling multi-touch, basically handling the raw touch data. On top of that, the framework does provide some abstraction layer like manipulation and inertia processes, right?
So correct. With WM Touch, you could really do whatever you wanted. With the raw data, you can build whatever your heart desires. We do provide two higher level APIs, manipulations and inertia. Manipulations are similar to gestures in a lot of ways, but they're more powerful. There are no restrictions in terms of how these interactions can be combined. You can rotate and zoom and scale and translate all at the same time. And you can have multiple of these going on at the same time, unlike gestures where there's only one gesture occurring at a time. I can be rotating two photos at the same time, or however many people or fingers I can get down on the screen. Inertia is also, in some ways, sort of a helper API. It's designed to work hand-in-hand with manipulations, and it provides a lot of the same functionality you saw with the panning inertia. But I could, you know, in our photo example, I could throw the photos and hand that off to the inertia processor, and it would, you know, basically animate them, you know, bouncing around the screen or whatever. So manipulations and inertia are intended to work together. Manipulations is really a superset of what gestures provides. It's all about handling rotations and scale and translation changes with any number of fingers too. If I put, you know, 10 fingers down on a large photo and sort of spread out my fingers, we will tell you exactly how much that changed the scale of the image, that sort of thing, whether it translated at all during that. So it's a very powerful API.
So we'll see how to actually use it in a second. The point I wanted to drive is that these engines are there for helping developers
yes.
do whatever they
yeah,
want.
Yeah, if you find our inertia engine is very simple and you need, you know, some very complicated physics model, you could absolutely replace it very easily and build your own inertia or physics model or whatever you need. You know, something with complicated collision detection. They're all intended to sort of be pluggable on top of WMTouch. Additionally, manipulations can take raw data from any source. It could be WMTouch data, or maybe you have some custom data source. Maybe you want to pass mouse data in, real-time stylus, whatever. It can take data from anywhere and provide the same functionality. It takes however many contacts you have and turns the changes in those over time into 2D affine transforms, basically.
Right. And then you can take this transform and do whatever you want.
Yeah, apply it to your object. You know, if you're talking about photos again, you know, slap that transform matrix on your photo and, you know, whatever, and you get a rotation and a scale change and so forth.
Right. So basically, the developer takes the basic WMTouch, and then they can pass that information after doing some manipulation. We'll see it in a second in the API to the manipulation in the inertia process, and then these processes will actually tell the dev when to do, tell the application when to do what, and then you can apply the transformation, if any.
Yeah, correct.
Sweet. So let's see it in action.
So we have a sample to show what they were talking about, and this is how it's completely different than gestures, where we can take this object and we can move it around and simultaneously perform rotations and scaling and panning at the same time.
Yeah. Right. This is one of the big differences between the manipulations API and the gestures API, is that the manipulations API lets you combine any of those sort of component gestures together. You can rotate and scale and translate all at the same time, whereas there are some limitations with the WM gesture. If we had multiple of these rectangles on screen as well, you could manipulate multiple of them at a time as well, which is nice. That's one of the other things that manipulations does that gestures doesn't, so you can have multiple sort of points of interaction and multiple manipulation processors going at a time.
Right. So we'll see it in the API in a second, but it's easier for us to compare manipulation to gesture as far as the functionality that they are providing, but as far as the abstraction, basically these are, you know, you get a transform matrix for each object and not just, you know, simple coordinates.
Yeah. High level, you feed raw data into the API, you do some hit testing to see whether, you know, the person's fingers or, you know, if you're getting the data from WMTouch, whether the WMTouch contacts are coming down on, you know, the rectangle here. And then you feed the contacts that are in the rectangle into a manipulation processor, and it hands you back, as data comes in, it hands you back updates in these transform matrices, which they then apply to your object and re-render and so forth.
Cool. So let's see the API in action.
All right. So let's actually look at some of the code. So similar to the previous example, we're getting our raw data from handling WMTouch. And from there, we're instead of just handling ourselves the raw touch input info, we're going to actually pass it in to the manipulation processor. And the manipulation processor, as noted before, is going to kind of, based on the different interaction that you do with your fingers, it's going to calculate sort of the transform necessary in order to apply your object. So you'll see here is we're doing the same thing. We're iterating through the frame of the touch input, and then we're directly passing it to our manipulation processor. Which has three functions that are included in it, which is process down, where essentially you'll see later that it's going to call back to your event sync, and it's going to call back the manipulation started, And these are functions in the interface that you must implement and the developer must do. The manipulation processor and inertia processor, they sort of come with a default implementation. But as Reed said, you can override it and sort of perform your own type of inertia if you need something more complicated. But the manipulation event sync, it is up to the developer to implement that interface.
Cool.
Yeah, to be clear, we provide concrete implementations of the manipulation processor and the inertia processor. There is a iManipulation events interface that you can implement to get callbacks from the processors. But yeah, you could certainly re-implement your own. You could use the existing interfaces for the manipulation or inertia processors if you wanted, or you could build something totally different.
Okay.
So we'll start looking at the event sync interface. So we'll just quickly look at the header file. And again, this is all defined on, you can see this all on MSDN to see what sort of things you have to implement. So the three basic functions are the manipulation started, the manipulation delta, and the manipulation completed. Manipulation started is sort of like where you begin prepping up everything for your object. Most of the actual functionality occurs in manipulation delta, where you take all these parameters that are passed to you by the processor, manipulation processor, and then beginning to apply that to your object. So as you can see here, there's a multitude of different parameters that you can use to apply to your object.
So you see there are translation and there are cumulative parameters are here. So
how
far down the stack do we actually accumulate, or there is some math behind these parameters?
The cumulative ones are from the beginning of the manipulation, so when the first sets of fingers went down until the current event. And if we look at manipulation completed, we wrap up the cumulative stuff as well for you.
So the manipulation completed, so there's the manipulation delta and the manipulation completed. This is essentially where you would want to kick off your inertia if you wanted to use inertia. So the general process for developers is that within manipulation completed, you take the velocity when you lifted your finger and passing that into the inertia processor. And then the inertia processor then sort of does a similar thing to the manipulation processor where it calls back to your event sync and then begins calling manipulation delta in order to get that effect where once you release your finger, it begins continuing the manipulation and moving the object.
Right. So just one clarify question. The inertia is a linear physics, right? Has a linear degradation of speed.
I don't remember the exact curve we use for deceleration. You do have some control over it. Inertia can be used two ways. One, you can specify how many pixels you want something to go before it stops, and then we will sort of back calculate the necessary deceleration to get you to stop there. Or you can specify a deceleration constant, and we will use that to decelerate you, and you know the end point is then
somewhere
dependent on the constant.
Sure.
So for this particular example, we're going to show some basic manipulations, as we've seen here. There's no inertia hooked up yet, but in our next one, we'll implement exactly what Reed said, where we can actually set either a desired displacement, a desired deceleration, and pass those values in order to achieve a desired deceleration.
Cool.
So that's the interface that has to be implemented. So if we actually crack open the CPP file, it's pretty straightforward to begin using the API. So as you can see here, in your manipulation delta, we're simply calling another function that applies the manipulation delta, and we're passing in the necessary information that we got back in order to update the object. So if you actually crack open apply manipulation delta, you'll see that we're essentially just taking the information that was calculated by the manipulation processor and applying that to our object.
Right, so you're taking the information, taking that matrix, the values, and then just repainting the object.
Yep, correct.
Or you can do something else in different scenario, but here we're just doing that.
Yeah. Right. So again, on a high level, you take your raw input, it could be mouse or touch or stylus, feeding that into the processor, which then does all the magic, and then calls back to your event sync that you've implemented. And then from there, you can do whatever you want with it.
Very cool.
Such as applying it to the transform.
Yep.
So the next sample, we're actually going to show do some more advanced manipulations, things like one finger rotation, being able to rotate at the corner of the object and actually having it move like it would in real life.
Multiple manipulations.
Right, multiple manipulations. And then to end off, we'll see inertia in action with being able to throw several objects, throw one object, that sort of thing.
Okay, let's see it.
Okay.
Basically, what we're going to see in action is, you know, using the same API, or just applying, you know, some higher level or more
sophisticated.
Yeah, it's
a little more advanced use of the API.
But it's up to the developer to do this fancy calculation and understanding exactly where is the, you know, where is how
one,
to apply
one of the themes of the things that make up the APIs in the best bucket is that they are powerful and flexible, and how much you want to use is up to you.
So moving on, getting more in depth in the best bucket, we'll start looking at more advanced manipulations and looking at inertia. So we'll run this sample. And we'll see that now we have multiple objects that we can interact with. So we can do the same things as we did before, where we take it and start scaling and rotating, that sort of thing. Again, you can take one finger, and then you can take the other, and we can start moving it. And you can take one if you want, and you can start moving it. So as you can see, it's different than gesture and different than the other sample, because we're beginning to map all the cursor IDs to the particular objects. So another thing for advanced manipulations is taking one finger and being able to rotate it. So it's very realistic in the sense that if you were to take an object like this in real life and start to push it on its corner, it will begin to rotate.
Right. So, again,
we have things like inertia, so you can take it and you can see it bounces off the wall. You can actually throw it hard enough where it bounces several times. And then we can take two objects and we can throw both of them, and you'll see that they both fly.
So this is very nice, and we're going to see the API in a second. Mm-hmm. The important thing that I want to drive before that is that once you get the information, like the touch, it's under the developer responsibility to do the heat testing and identify the object that the manipulation applies to.
That's a good point. The manipulation processor is totally UI framework agnostic. It doesn't care what coordinate system you're passing it data. It doesn't know what the units are, that sort of thing. And it certainly doesn't know where the objects in your window are. So you do your own heat testing, and you map when, you know, contacts go down and go up to which manipulation processor needs to get the data, right? If I put two fingers down, one of which is on this red square and one of which isn't, you know, this guy that isn't here, maybe we just ignore the touchdown, but the touchdown from this finger needs to go to this manipulation processor and call process move and all that sort of thing.
So the manipulation processor can be viewed as is this black box that receives input. And the output of this black box is metric transformation, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I get some number of contacts, and they go through some set of changes, and the output of that is a 2D transform matrix.
Cool. So let's see the API.
Right. So before I close this sample, again, the manipulation processor doesn't care where your input came from, just that it's right. So I can literally take my mouse, and I can begin to rotate it. So in applications, if some things you can't achieve with a mouse, like scaling, but you can still achieve things like panning. And because you can do single finger rotations, you should be able to do rotations as well. And then you can take this object and you can throw it with the mouse.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, so now we can go and look at some of the code and see what type of work is necessary in order to get things like inertia going.
Okay.
So for this particular example, we've implemented inertia using a timer. You can, of course, have it on a separate thread and process it that way. So the obvious places to kick off inertia, like I said, is the manipulation completed event. Places where you want to sort of stop inertia would be things like when the inertia finishes, which the inertia processor will tell you when it's completed. Another instance to sort of stop inertia is when you throw the object and then you touch it with your finger, and you would ideally want to stop it. So if we look here at the code, we're simply just handling a WM timer message and then calling sort of our process change function in order to get things going.
Sure.
So similar to the previous example, we have a manipulation event sync. This one, of course, in order to accommodate all those different manipulations and inertia, is a larger manipulation event sync that does a bit more work than the previous one that you saw. So inner manipulation started, as I said before, this would be a good time in order to sort of stop inertia from happening, because what happens is when the object starts moving and you perform your hit testing on the object and it happens to be that you're in the region, it will then call process down for that object, which in then will return will call this event sync. So then we stop the inertia for this particular object. Similar to before, we have a manipulation delta. Of course, this one is, again, does a bit more work. So things like handling the rotate and the scale and the translate, that sort of thing.
It's also important to note that you have one of these event syncs for each of the squares in the sample.
Right. So each square in the sample has its own manipulation processor and its own inertia processor and its own event sync tied to all that.
Sure. So basically each object that you want to apply the manipulation to.
I mean, this is a simple sample. It sets all that stuff up front. You could do these things lazily, like if you had a big photo app with a huge gallery of photos, you know, when a finger comes down, you could create a manipulation processor on that photo, and then the processor could go away when all the fingers come up. There's a lot of flexibility in how you handle these.
Sure. So we have the same sync event, as you mentioned before. This one is a little bit more complex because we're doing more stuff than just rotating.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So some of the things, so again, we have to do a bit more work when we want to, in order to achieve inertia. But before I go and look at the inertia, these are other properties that you can set in the manipulation processor. The pivot point X, Y, and the pivot radius allows you to be able to rotate with your single finger. So these are things that you can set for the manipulation processor, and it accommodates for the transforms.
Cool. Yeah. So basically you can set the X, Y, so you can find this X, Y either to the center of 2 points or 1 point.
We should run the sample very quickly just to demonstrate how single finger rotation works in these properties. Right. The pivot radius is basically how far out from the center of your object do you want things to become translation. You can see there's no rotation here because I'm grabbing in the center of the object. I'm within that radius where there's no actual pivoting. Outside of the radius, things become rotation and translation. So that's what the two properties are about, is the center, the pivot X and Y, and the radius around that becomes, when a finger's in there, it becomes translation, and outside of it, it becomes some combination of rotation and translation.
Okay, cool.
So we'll see here, if we look down in the manipulation completed, so again, because we were using a timer, we simply call the setTimer function in order to kick off inertia, and the timer will just constantly call that process change function that we've created. So if we go to the setup inertia function, this is essentially where we set all the properties of how we want our inertia to behave. So the first thing that we see here is the desired deceleration, and as the name says, it basically tells you when I throw an object, how fast does the object slow down, essentially. And then we can do the same for rotation, desired angular deceleration. And if you prefer that, for instance, you want to define it by the distance it's traveled, you would use desired displacement property setting. And then from there, you define a number of pixels that you would want it to move, and then it will do the necessary math in order to stop it at that point.
So the general model for the inertia processor is you set up a bunch of initial state, which you can get off the manipulation processor when you get the manipulation completed event. You'll have things like the cumulative velocity and so forth. Slap all that in there as initial state. Then specify how you want deceleration to work. Do you want it to go some specific distance, or do you want it to have some specific deceleration constant? And then on a timer or in some other fashion, just tell it to process. So in the sample here, we just set a WM timer message, and it calls us back, and we call process, and that will kick the inertia processor, which will send an event back to you on your event sync that looks like just another, user-driven interaction, but it's actually inertia driving the changes in translation deltas and things like that.
So you would get, you wouldn't get the begin event again, but you get a regular delta event.
Offhand, I don't remember. I don't think you get a manipulation started event, but
no.
I think you get,
no.
You get deltas.
Deltas, and then,
and
the
then
end,
you get the completed.
And the completed again. Okay.
So to reiterate what Reed said, we're just simply setting the properties for the inertia processor, things like its initial origin and its velocity. So its initial velocity over here, which the developer has to get, or we encourage to get, from the manipulation processor. Because when you release your finger, the velocity is already there, already calculated, and you simply just pass that to the inertia processor.
Sure.
So it's very easy for the developer. You're just using the existing manipulation and inertia processors for that. And then from there, once inertia gets called, it calls process on each iteration that the WM timer hits, and then it calls the delta to incrementally change the location of the object.
Basically, you fall back to the model that we've covered before.
Exactly.
And then the result is very impressive.
Yeah.
You get multiple people doing multiple stuff like
right.
that.
So I can take this, and you can take that, and I can decide to throw the object. So you get some pretty good bounces off the screen.
Inertia can handle not only translation inertia, but rotation and expansion inertia as well.
Right.
I don't know that we have expansion inertia hooked up in the sample, but you can see rotation
right
there.
So, yeah.
And again, the once you get the handle and understanding of what you need to hook up into and what messages you need to handle, the bulk of the code is not processing these messages, but it's more of like the rendering and mm-hmm. you know, when you hit the wall, what do you do, and et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Cool.
Right.
So this is really impressive. I mean, it's relatively easy for a developer to get the information, get the multi-touch, the raw touch input, feed it to the manipulation and inertia processes,
mm-hmm.
and then you know handle the transformation and apply them to the whatever they want to do under application. This is really great. So I mean, this is the end of our part two of the two deep dive into Windows 7 multi-touch. So how do you want to what do you want to say for a summary?
We've talked about a lot of stuff today. We started with WM Gesture. And WM Gesture is really a simple way for existing apps to get notifications when somebody performs one of the many gestures over their window. We do all the processing of the gesture. There's very little work on the application side. They just need to map the gesture notification to some functionality in their app, you know, moving their scroll bars, changing the zoom on their content, things like that, performing a rotation. In a lot of cases, like Photo Gallery or you know a photo viewing app, they already have these functions for rotation and zoom changes and whatnot. It's just a matter of mapping them to the notification. We next talked about WM Touch and how you get raw data in your application. And this is really the basis for almost everything in the best bucket and enables you to do whatever you want to do. You can do custom gesture recognition, you can do data visualization like we showed with the Scratchpad sample, you could rebuild MS Paint if you wanted on top of WM Touch. And it also feeds into the higher level abstractions like manipulations and inertia. And you see that manipulations are really a superset of what we get with gestures. They are more powerful, you can have multiple of them going at a time with however many fingers you can get down on the device. And then inertia plays hand in hand with manipulations and provides a lot of the same functionality we saw with panning and that sort of inertia. But everything in that section is also sort of modular. You don't have to use our inertia if you don't want. You could build your own inertia engine. And you could use a different source of raw data to feed in the manipulations. You don't even have to use manipulations. For example, the Scratchpad, which is just data visualization, doesn't need that. So the intent is that these are flexible pieces that you can sort of plug and play with as you need.
Cool. So this is really exciting. Most of the samples that we've seen here are public samples. They will be on the SDK.
Yes, the Windows Platform SDK.
Right. We're gonna maybe we'll be able to port some of those into the MSDN Developer page, landing, mm-hmm. Windows 7 landing page. So you guys can simply go out there, grab this, and start playing because this is really cool. Excellent. So Ian, thank you very much.
Yep. Reed,
hey, thanks a lot.
Good
to have
you
guys here. Yep. And stay tuned for more Windows 7 session here on Channel 9.